Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In My Heart Is Not Blind, on Blindness and Perception, an exhibit at the Whitney Museum, we are given a rare glimpse into the world of those who are visually impaired, and we hear their stories. This is Marty Hawthorne.
How amazing it is to have a child, to be a mom. I remember feeling her with my hands, just studying her arms and her fingers, long, skinny, thin fingers, but just they'd go on forever. And I remember the next day, reality set in and I thought, oh no, I have a baby. What do I need to know? What do I need to know as a blind parent? What do I need to know to take care of my child? I didn't find much on the internet, actually. I found comfort in talking to moms who were blind and had their own children. And then, of course, as I learned about my daughter and I got to know her and she got to know me, it was very comfortable and natural. The worry wore off.
Photographer Michael Nye spent 7 years collecting these stories, taking portraits of people who could not see. But there are many different ways to see, as we find out through this exhibit and in the book by the same name from Trinity University Press. In Bexar County, there's an estimated 15,000 people who are blind or live with visual impairment. What resources are available in the community for those who seek support and services? We really want to have a community building exercise here today. We want you to call in with your questions and comments. The number is 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined today with Michael Nye. He's a photographer and documentarian. His new book is My Heart Is Not Blind, on Blindness and Perception, and there's the exhibit at the Whitney Museum. Also with us is Jeff Chandler, coordinator of OWL Radio with the Low Vision Resource Center. Welcome to The Source, both of y'all. It's great to have you.
Thanks for inviting us.
So, Michael Nye, how did you have had other groundbreaking photographic exhibits looking at young mothers and also about people dealing with mental illness and taking their pictures, bringing them to people and having them to recast perceptions of them. And now you've seemed like you've taken it even further, challenging people with photography to talk about blindness. This is amazing.
Well, it really was an extraordinary privilege to spend these years, 2 or 3, 4 days with each person around the country. And this exhibit is really stories from the inside, not the outside. They're stories close up, not from a distance. And I think this exhibit's about blindness, but it's also about the nature of perception. How do we know anything? Where does it come from? What's the extent of our knowledge? It's about the nature of adaptation and how attention changes us profoundly. But it's also about our shared humanity and fragility, and about the grave misunderstanding, ignorance, about the experience of blindness.
There seems to be a theme of your work of we're talking, you go into communities that tend to be suffer a degree of isolation, and whether it's imposed or self-imposed or through prejudice or miscommunication, and then you're going in there and bringing them to the fore and shattering that isolation. I mean, is that what's going on here?
Well, one thing is for certain. When a sighted person talks about someone blind or visually impaired, they talk about obstacles, inabilities, limitations. But if someone goes blind or visually impaired, if they lose their sight, they don't lose their insight. They don't lose their voice. They don't lose their personal histories, their intellect, their wisdom, their humor, their dignity. Yes, at the beginning, there's anxiety, depression, there is desperation.
It's a tough transition.
But over time and adaptation, there's no limitation to someone blind or visually impaired.
I'm going to go to the phone lines this is Christina, and her son Weston is featured in the exhibit. And the number is 210-614-8980 for you to call in. Hey, Christina, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Tell us about what your experience has been like and how Weston is featured in the exhibit.
You know, it was such an honor to work with Mr. Knight. And as Weston's mom, you know, one of the things that, you know, I've met a group of other mothers in the past, and one of them said to me, you know, how did you not stay on the couch? I was on the couch for 6 months, so upset after I found out. And I just kind of replied, because I'm my son's voice. No one will speak for him the way I will. So, you know, when our story came out, and the way Mr. Knight, you know, helped me to tap into the emotions that I have always kept behind closed doors. I never, ever want my son to feel like he is a burden, or he, you know, because of the inability that he has. And we, as Mr. Knight just said, you know, we consider his blindness, and it's not a disability, it's an inability, and that we overcome. So we make sure to encourage Weston to try everything. And he has his own go-kart, he has dirt bikes. I mean, he's just literally just blind.
And so, I mean, Weston seems like an incredible young man. There's he runs. There's even a Weston run with Lighthouse for the Blind.
What is it? Yes, Weston Wright, Lighting the Way. This past year was our 10th year participating, and all of the funds from that has helped to fund the blind children's program that the San Antonio Lighthouse for the Blind built. It's also a resource center for parents, because that was one of the things when we were given Weston's diagnosis, my mom was with me, and I was not expecting it at all. And the way it was given me was the doctor came in the room, sat down on the stool, and said, just so you know, blind people can do everything that other people can do. Just don't expect him to walk and talk like your first son did. And I was floored. I just looked at him and I said, are you telling me my son is blind? And he said, yes. Weston had septo-optic dysplasia, so his optic nerve did not fully develop in utero. I remember, and then he just said, you know, come back for follow-up so we can check the health of his eyes. And that was it. And I left there in complete shock. So I never wanted another parent to have to go through that feeling of, you know, first of all, you're scared. I've never met anyone blind before my son. Fear sets in. How am I going to teach him how to make the sounds with each letter? You know, how am I going? All these different things. So our approach to life was completely changed. Now we've adapted, and Weston has just beat so many odds, and I just am so proud of him. So we really don't even, we do use the words like, hey, do you want to watch a movie? And some people look at us like, did you just ask your son that? And, you know, so we try to prepare him for the world, because not everyone is going to know that he's blind, just because when you first, you know, walk up to talk to him, he's very engaging.
So and how old is he right now?
Weston's 14 now. He's in the eighth grade.
And Christina, what do you want people to get out of this exhibit?
You know, what I would really like is it's community awareness. As Mr. and I mentioned, you know, there's so many misconceptions, and Weston, you know, he's a very personable person, so he can sense when someone is near and perhaps apprehensive, or, you know, and a lot of people say they don't know what to say to right. him. And so I really encourage people to go to the Witte Museum, listen to each of these stories, and realize how much we have in common and how many of the participants are, as I always say with Weston, just blind.
All right, Christina, thank you so much for calling, and I sure do appreciate you telling us your story and Weston's story as well. Michael Nye, your exhibit, My Heart Is Not Blind, at the Witte Museum now, and you have the book coming up from Trinity University Press. When you first thought about this is what you wanted to work on, how different did the project, is this what you originally envisioned, or did it make a lot of changes?
I started thinking about doing this project over 30 years ago. I was in Saudi Arabia. I was on an Arts America tour and had an exhibit in Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia. And the curator asked me if I would give a gallery talk to 10 individuals that were blind. They spoke English. And I just have never seen a group of individuals listen so intently. And they ask questions like, why are you a photographer? What's black and white mean? What's beautiful that's not visual? How does anyone understand the world outside themselves? Is a photograph like reality? And so I remember going home to San Antonio, got a small grant, and brought four or five people that were blind with five people that were artists, a poet, a photographer, painter, sculptor. And we all talked about perception, echolocation, presence, mindfulness, visualization, time and space, metaphor, ambiguity, material from a sculptor. But everyone came away just with a new vocabulary. It was so exciting. I really wanted to have these conversations. So I came back to this and wanted to know more about what they know.
And you thought this was something that needed to be explored and brought to more individuals, brought to museums, brought into a book. This is going to be a traveling exhibit?
It's going to be a traveling exhibit. And blindness is not what the public thinks it is at all. It's so different. It's not darkness. It's not blackness. It's not fear. It's not a life of misery. Your life is not broken. And most of the people, David, that I interviewed that have been blind for a long time or visually impaired, if you ask them, would you want your sight back, most of them would say, no, I don't. I've adapted. I'm happy with the way I am. One person said, only if I had an on and off switch, I might take it.
But we always hear about how other senses will compensate for the loss of vision. We know that even through neuroscience that happens, that the part of the brain that is dedicated for visual is now moved over and is taken over by other parts of the senses. So the neuroplasticity of the brain is part of the adaptation.
Yes, exactly. It's pretty interesting, neuroplasticity. When you're not seeing and nothing is going to the occipital lobe or their visual cortex, what neuroscientists are finding out is that that part of the brain is being used also for language, for sound, for touch. And someone that's blind doesn't hear better, but they extract new meaning from familiar sounds. There's a cultivation of attention. It's all about attention. Just imagine not seeing for 2 days and what you would hear. It's a tapestry. It's an anatomy of sound that you've never experienced before. And I think our eyesight is so selfish. It wants it all. And I think one thing I've learned among many things is that there's awareness with touch and sound that we don't experience.
And do you think that many people are surprised when they walk into the exhibit at what's out there?
They are. I just got a note yesterday. I wanted to read that, just an email. This visitor wrote me just yesterday, and he said, after reading your introduction and stories in the book, while I anticipated resilience, courage, and the need for normality, I was not prepared by the number of individuals who have been abused, verbally and physically raped, abandoned, belittled, shot, or otherwise victims of dysfunctional family situations. The words of resilience and courage take on new meanings. Yet, I find this project insightfully positive.
Michael Nye is a photographer, documentarian. His exhibit is My Heart is Not Blind on Blindness and Perception. It's at the Witte Museum currently. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. We're going to be talking about some services in San Antonio that are available for those who are visually impaired. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this.
My life as a blind person began when I was 3 years old in January of 1944. It was a Saturday morning. My mother had left a group of children at home just for a minute while she ran to the store. There were about four or five cousins, my brother and I. My brother, he was at the time a little past 11. I was three. But he picked up a rifle. I think it was partly for show. I don't know. I remember my brother asking me if I wanted to play cowboys, and I said no. And that was just before the gun went off. Now I have two prostheses, artificial eyes.
That is Burns Taylor, and he is part of the exhibit that is at the Witte Museum, My Heart is Not Blind on Blindness and Perception. Michael Nye is the photographer and documentarian for that. The exhibit will be at the Witte through March 31st, and Michael Nye will be giving a talk there at the show at 6 p.m. on January 23rd. Tell me more about Burns Taylor. What impression did he have on you? He seemed like a gentle voice.
He came to the opening, flew in from El Paso. He says one thing that I thought was so fundamentally important, and I have the book here. He says, one of the essential questions of existence for me is, how can I live peacefully with something that no one else would want to be? People aren't lining up to say, I want to be blind. How do you learn to live with something that society makes you feel you should be ashamed of, makes you feel that you're not capable, not whole like everyone else? Society's perception is that I'm not equal to them, that I can't do the job that they can do. That's something I live with every single day. And Burns Taylor is a teacher, university teacher, has a number of books out, a poet, articulate, and this is what people that are blind have to put up with. It's the perception out there, the ignorance is really difficult.
And his most recent book is My Hands or My Eyes? Is that what it is?
My Hands or My Eyes.
And it's a book of poetry?
A poetry, yes it is.
But the thing that he talked about, he's dealing with this misconceptions, these lies that we have about what it is to be blind. And you're trying to shatter those lies and tell truths about that through the voice and through the experience, through the stories of people who live that life. Michael Nye.
I think it's that, absolutely. But it's also about those issues about how all of us change and our brain changes. And I know people that are blind or visually impaired, they go from visual orientation to thinking non-visually. That's hard for a sighted person to understand, to think in a non-visual orientation. I'd like to read one other thing just really briefly. When this book was being sent out, they have anonymous readers, people that are serious readers of literature. And one of them came back, this one man wrote back after reading some of these narratives, and he said, I found these narratives of the blind and visually impaired so articulate, I question whether these stories are really the sentences spoke by the blind participants. Then he went on to say, would each of these participants recognize these words as something they actually said? So what this guy is saying, and this guy's a reader, not very smart, very ignorant, but he said, if you're blind, there's no way you can be articulate. If you're blind, you can't be intelligent. If you're blind, you won't be able to express your own thoughts. And they deal with this every single day.
Jeff Chandler is coordinator of OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center that is based here in San Antonio. Can you tell me more about OWL Radio?
Yeah, OWL Radio is just one of the parts of the Low Vision Resource Center, the other part being the Low Vision Club. OWL Radio started in 2002 by our founder, Bonnie Truax, the late Bonnie Truax. Bonnie had the great idea to start the Low Vision Club because she had lost her vision late in life. She was an avid reader, especially of the newspaper, and her goal was to get a radio reading service for the blind started. So that started in 2002, and actually thanks to Texas Public Radio, who's a huge partner of ours, that began. There's only three of us in the office, one full-time executive director, Lisa Mealy, and two part-time coordinators. My job mainly is to set the programs up that run during the day. We do 2 to 3 hours of live reading of the San Antonio Express News every day, and that's done by a volunteer staff. We've got probably 65 to 80 people at any given time who volunteer their time to come in and read, come in to record programs, because we do 30-minute programs of pre-recorded material like from AARP Magazine or Prevention or Sports Illustrated, things of that nature. We do that as well. So all that to say that we provide a service to the visually impaired community. We also serve the print impaired community as well. People who reach a certain age and they can't read anymore. They can't read print, so they are also available to use our services as well.
And so through the KSTX carrier wave, Texas Public Radio, so that's why people, if you're scanning the radio dial, you're not going to find it. It's kind of hidden in our carrier wave, but you have a special receiver that can pick it up. And so if people want to get one of those receivers to enable to get these services for them or someone in their family or loved one, they can do that.
Yes, they can. They can contact us over the phone at 210-829-4223 or go to the internet to owlradio.org. They can have an application downloaded, send that in to us. The radios are given out free. We do ask for donations, but the radios are given out free. It typically reaches the Bexar County service area. For those in the Hill Country or those outside of Bexar County, we have a couple other ways to listen. You can listen over the internet using the Tuned In app, or you can use your smartphone. There's an Audio Now service on the smartphone that you can get Owl Radio. And we have listeners all over the country, as far away as Hawaii, listening to Owl Radio from time to time. So those are the three ways that you can really get tuned in.
And this is Texas Public Radio has partnered with you for a very long time, and this is just something we do with you. And I guess our supporters, our members, they're the support. They're the ones that are making it happen as well.
Correct.
So they have something else to be proud of. Let me go to another caller. This is Michael. Hi, Michael. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. It's a fascinating subject. This is Michael Sohaki. I'm a small business owner and I'm a semi-professional writer in San Antonio. I read a great deal, and a large portion of my job is educating the people who manage my company and the hourly employees. So how we give and receive information is something that I deal with many hours of my day. I also have three children, and we end up, I find myself having this same lecture with the people that I work with and my children, that because of all of the technology that's vision-based, that we're becoming an increasingly visual society, and that there are a number of costs that come with that increase, that people's reading and literary skills, writing, communicating, listening, are falling by the wayside because so much focus is being put on visual stimulus. And I think it's fascinating that while we're struggling to escape this control from the visual inputs that we're getting from cell phones and computer screens, that blind people are at least to a degree immune,
right?
And that they have a different perspective on life, that I spend so much of my daily work and my parenting trying to get people off of. And
Michael, thank you for the call. You bring up some interesting points about how we consume information in this age. Jeff Chandler, since you do OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center, the Low Vision Club, talk about, I mean, is it harder? Is it easier? I mean, with technology, with smart speakers, you can ask your, hey, you know, what's going on in the world? And your speaker will tell you. But if without advocates for the blind or any other accessibility issue, we're not going to make the technology available. So is that happening?
We're trying hard to make technology fit the needs of the client. You know, you can use the smart speakers to get into tune in to hear OWL Radio. You know, the vision that Bonnie Truax had was she wants people who have lost their vision to not lose touch with especially the local community, what's going on in the local community. And that's why the Low Vision Club was formed, so that it's a support group. It's a, you know, it builds camaraderie. It's a place for people to go and hear topics of interest for, you know, the visually impaired community. All those things played into the creation of the Low Vision Club and OWL Radio, because the need was there, and we want people to remain connected.
All right, we're talking about an exhibit at the Whitty Museum, My Heart is Not Blind, on blindness and perception. With us in the studio is Michael Nye, the photographer and documentarian. He also has a book by that same name from Trinity University Press. Jeff Chandler is with us also in the studio. He's a coordinator of OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. Our phone line is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're talking about what it means to be blind and what kind of space do we have for people who are visually impaired in our society? Are we doing right by them? What can we do to make sure that we are inclusive, invite people into our lives, and don't shut them out? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Blindness isn't a punishment. My mom tells me that shortly after I came home from the hospital, my eyes were both bandaged, you know, for them to be healed. Mom never hid me. She would take me to the store and people would run after her and ask her, "What's wrong with your daughter? Why are her eyes bandaged? What happened?" And she would explain to them that I had cancer and I had to have some surgery. And they said, "Well, you must have done something. You know, God punished you." Or they would say, "Well, if she had cancer, why didn't you just let her die? How was she going to live that way?" And my mother would use some expletives and just tell them, "Leave me alone. Go away."
Wow. We're talking about blindness and perception. Michael Nye is with us. His book is My Heart is Not Blind, on blindness and perception. He's got an exhibit at the Whitty Museum. Can you tell us more about Olivia?
There's another thing that Olivia talked about. When I was there, she just got back from a trip to the Grand Canyon. And she said, "I remember so much about it in terms of the weather. We had sun for a bit, and we had extreme cold, but it was a peaceful feeling. Standing on the rim, I could feel the vastness, the enormity of the canyon. Even in the breeze, it was quiet. Something came over me. I felt a chill. I was even shaky, not scared, but it struck me as a spiritual feeling. I don't know if it's the same feeling that someone has who sees, but that's how I felt. I felt small."
Incredible. I'm going to take a call. Number is 210-614-8980. This is Ralph. Hi, Ralph. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to make a quick comment based on something I heard previous caller say. And that was that I think they were referring to people who are blind as blind people. And I just don't think anybody likes to be defined solely by, you know, one trait.
Yes.
Like that. Somebody who has blindness isn't a blind person. In my opinion, that's what I've been taught. Just wanted to say that on the air.
Well, you're absolutely right. And if I slipped up and said that, I apologize. You know, but I'm doing the best I can. Michael Nye, what about language in this?
Absolutely. As I said at the beginning, this exhibit is about what we have in common, about our shared humanity and our shared fragility. But I do think that language bleeds into public's attitude, blind rage,
blind
eye. The president's blind to the suffering of others. I heard that on the radio coming in this morning. And although that won't stop, the blind leading the blind, I mean, language impacts attitudes and misperceptions and toward the blind. And that's a problem.
And so I'm glad the caller called in, and I guess maybe it was, I guess I made that mistake. I don't know, and I'm willing to be called out for it if I did and own it. But, you know, what's the best way to deal with that? You know, we want people to feel comfortable and communicate. We don't want to make people feel uncomfortable and shut things down, right?
Right. I think Robert Dittman, who's in the exhibit, said it best. He said, and he asked people to do this. He says, the one thing I really want people to understand is to step out your dependence on vision. Go sit in a dark room for an hour and open up your ears and listen. Go touch something. But remember, you are not experiencing true blindness because you can always psychologically turn on the light. But at least it's a glimpse into our world. It's not a terrible place, not a horrible, miserable world that we exist in. It's a beautiful world, an exciting and adventurous world. It's vibrant world, just as relevant as a sighted world. It's just different. It's no less.
Let's go to Nessie on the line, on the phone. And Nessie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Well, this is Nessie, but
Nessie.
That's okay. Michael, I saw the book at your house, but I wish I would have thought to ask this question then. And maybe you've even already answered it. I didn't hear this whole show. I have an aunt who is 97 years old and is severely visually impaired. And is there an audio version of the book out or that will be out?
All right, Nessie, thank you for that.
There is Trinity University Press. Tom Payton is going to do, I think, an audio one of those audio books. And although the audio exhibit, the traveling exhibition, is different than the book, at some point it will be out, yes.
And so Jeff Chandler at Owl Radio, what is your connection to the visually impaired world? Will you work with Owl Radio? What is your personal experience?
My personal experience has been enhanced just the 3.5 years that I've been involved with Owl Radio. Prior to that, I don't have too many people in my personal family who are visually impaired. So I came into this not knowing very much about the world of being visually impaired, and I've learned a tremendous amount of things. And a lot of the things that Michael has talked about with people's perception of people with visual impairment, I've encountered over the years, and you know, now working for Owl Radio, I see it clearly, and there is a need to help educate the public on what people with visual impairments go through on a daily basis.
And so, Michael Nye, it seems like your exhibit, the primary focus is informing people that folks who are visually impaired are no less. They're capable of everything, anything that anyone else can do. But what about asking people to have some gratitude or appreciate or not take for granted their own ability to see? I mean, you're a photographer. You deal in light. You that's part of what you do.
Ask me that again.
You walk into the exhibit and then you walk out and you're thinking, I want to look around me and just look twice and appreciate just the pleasure of looking, which maybe before going to the exhibit I may not have paid attention to.
Well, this exhibit is a visual exhibit as well as audio. So every portrait has an audio player and headphone next to it. But as you said at the very beginning when you introduced this project, there's many ways of awareness. There are many ways of awareness, and our eyesight is one among many. And maybe we're missing out on a lot. I think I have learned so much about taking things for granted and having a deeper relationship. Perception's deeper and more mysterious than we can imagine. I really like what Frances Fuentes said. It's really short. She said, "I know what it feels like to be sighted and to be blind. When I was sighted, I could see the world, and now that I'm blind, I can feel it, smell it, hear it. It's like stepping out of one dimension to another. I feel like it's like being bilingual. I can either speak to someone in Spanish or speak to someone in English. Blindness is just a different language. I know both sides, dark and light." And so, you know, there's just different ways of awareness in the world.
Betsy is called in. And Betsy, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay. Go ahead.
I just wanted to let y'all know that the San Antonio Museum of Art also holds monthly multisensory tours for the visually impaired. They're docent-led tours, and they include descriptive language, touch, sound, and smell, and guide dogs, sighted companions. All visitors are welcome. It's a really innovative program, and I think it might be relevant to many of your listeners. And I'm so excited that the Witte's exhibiting Michael Nye's work. He's an old family friend, and I think what he's doing is really important.
Betsy, thank you for the call. You know, you've done other work. We mentioned earlier about, but one of them sticks out is the one about the photographs, portraits you took of people who have been dealing with a mental illness. And that is still touring. That is still being out there.
It is. I've got an exhibit, Fine Line, Mental Health, Mental Illness. I spent 4 years interviewing people with mental illness. So it's from their point of view. And it's gone to maybe 70 cities around the country. It's going to South Carolina this week, opening up there at a university. I have one on hunger in America. I spent 4.5 years interviewing people that have experienced hunger either in their childhood or before or currently. And that exhibit's gone to maybe 60 cities also around the country. Stories are important. I really like what Mario Aguirre in this project said. He said, "Listening is a risk. And the risk is you may hear something that will change you." And so I really see this project as a celebration of risk-taking, celebration of listening, and a celebration of change perspectives.
And we need people to realize when you listen, the first thing you gotta do is you gotta stop talking. And so you can stop all of the ideas that you had before, enter with the tabula rasa into your exhibit, and look at each individual portrait, listen to their stories, and absorb them as individuals, not as a collective, but each one is different in so many different ways, but it's still threaded together.
That's a really good point, because going blind at birth is so different than going blind when you're 10 or 20 or 70 or 80. Going blind over 20 years gradually is different than being shot in the face or a train hitting you or some other in an instant.
A traumatic
event. Being blind for the first year is different than being blind for the seventh year or ninth year. With visual impairment, it's very complex, low, mild, extreme visual impairment. People have said it's like living not in the sighted world, but also not in the blind world also. They're somewhere in between. So every story, every situation is profoundly different and unique.
And at the end of the exhibit, you think it's an uplifting experience?
Oh, for me, it is. It's changed me profoundly.
Michael Nye is a photographer, documentarian. His new book is My Heart Is Not Blind, on blindness and perception. He has an exhibit at the Witte Museum. It's there till the end of March. Also with us is Jeff Chandler, coordinator of OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. You can contact them for services that they provide. They also have get-togethers for people in San Antonio who are dealing with visual impairment. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.